If my opinions didn't change or hadn't changed these last few decades, then I would still believe that Rainbow Bright should have led for president and that George Michael was undoubtedly at any time now, at some point, he was going to fall in love with me. Those were the opinions I had 30 odd years ago. And I'm rather pleased that I evolved and changed my opinions.
I'm Carrie Lloyd, and you're listening to the Carry On podcast. Come and stay a while amid the British charm that is called my brain. I'm a journalist and pastor in California, but don't hold that against me. I wasn't brainwashed. I chose to leave my atheism on my own accord, consequently after two sips of Kool-Aid. But that's for another time. These opinions are my own, most of the time. The humour was learned of a book I found in a hedge, and the dreamer in me, well, she's here to stay. So, you're very welcome.
Friends, Romans, countrymen, lovely to be back on the Carry On podcast. I am very excited to do this and absolutely terrified all at the same time. I don't know why I'm very excited and I don't know why I'm terrified, but there are emotions happening and I'm just going to put those inside so that I could just get this thing out. This has been something that's been on my heart for a long time. And it's been an observation both of myself and what I've learned from the 20s up to the 40s, as well as what I'm seeing in a current generation of the era of content. We've gone from the information age to the influential age, which I'm not sure is that all that helpful at times. And so I kind of want to look a little bit more, a little deeper into social media, what we're putting out there. And I also want to look a little bit more as sort of confession, as a sort of self-reflection, a learning of things that I made mistakes of myself. And hopefully my pain is your game. I've called this Remove Your Cloak. This is basically based on a little story in Mark, Bartimaeus, the blind beggar, who basically reached out to gain income by wearing a cloak that was given to him by local judges of the town. It was an official coat to say this is an official beggar, so to speak, that can actually gain income and is a legitimate person to be able to give money to because he's blind. Well, this lovely story of where Bartimaeus is asking what's happening, there's commotion in the streets, and he is told that it's Jesus of Nazareth walking down past him. Bartimaeus cries out to Jesus. Jesus stops, tells him to come over, and he's told to come over in this moment, but he removes his cloak before going over to Jesus. There's something about this that is quite a revelation to me. He was choosing to remove his identity of being a blind beggar before he was healed by Jesus. And I felt like that was a little something, a little lesson for all of us to really look into. Are we honestly removing our cloak of our trauma and the things that have afflicted us, the things that we've experienced in our life? Are we honestly removing our cloak to ensure that we actually have the opportunity of a miracle still to happen in our lives? And because we're in this era of content, because we're looking for ways to start a conversation, a lot of times we're actually starting from what we've been victim to, what we've found trauma in. I have been absolutely guilty of this myself. For many years, I talked about being the single one and how we were misrepresented, how sometimes people didn't understand us because we weren't necessarily marrying in our mid-20s or early 30s. I would often use that information and that material as reasons to help or comfort or guide or use it as a teaching mechanism. There were times where I would also talk about, I don't know, having an alcoholic parent in the last 5 years of their particular lives. And I found myself in this process of using that content to be, again, a helper, warrior in times of strife and difficulty. I was using it and my overcoming, my victory through a difficult process as part of my identity. It became my identity. We all look for overcoming stories. We look for victory. We look for, oh my gosh, how inspiring to see this person overcome that particular ailment, that problem, that affliction. And what we've discovered is in that process of sharing, whether it's vulnerability, or whether it's we've been a victim, or whether we've been afflicted by something, we've learned to get attention. We've learned that we actually get some element of comfort from those who are giving us compassion and empathy. I know when I'm in pain, I need to have compassion. I need to have empathy from people. And there are times where people will give that to us, even complete strangers will give that to us if we're posting about it on social media. So what do we do with that? Does that suggest that we should never actually post anything up there because we don't want to get sort of familiar with a trauma? We don't get to use our trauma as a comfort. There are times of why are we repeating the same pattern? Why are we in the same cycle? Why are we repeating the same story over and over again? Well, some of that is because it's familiar. Some of that is because it's a comfort to actually repeat the same affliction or talk about the same story or to suggest that there are no good men out there and that's why we're single. There are times where we're not actually aware of the impact of what our story and sharing our story is actually doing. I guess I've got a good example here where I was a very religious person when I was growing up. I was very, very devout to God and all the legalism that came with some of this religion. And it didn't make me the kindest person. It didn't make me very warm. If anything, it made me very cold and very black and white with people, very dogmatic in how it should look. I spoke down to people. I already had a decision about what their destiny was going to look like because they didn't think or feel or act the same way that I believed should be the right way to act and live. It was cruel. It made labels. It put people into brackets. So, of course, when I went through trauma, and I was obviously, I was kind of devoted to God in a way that actually wasn't anything to do with God. It was a form of comfort. It was a form of structure that I was looking for. I wanted wisdom in order to live the right way. I wanted to actually avoid storms. I wanted to run to religion for a crutch. I wasn't doing it in the name of a relationship, in the name of something beautiful and courageous and brave. I was doing it as a crutch, which can happen an awful lot on the side of religion. Well, if you bring in a very traumatic event, like the death of a father, for example, the next thing you'll find is that you are revolting about against the very thing that you thought was a comfort, that you thought was inspiring, that you thought was the place that was going to avoid all matter of affliction. This is why we see an awful lot of deconstruction happen after trauma. It's normally all rejection from a church or church hurt, things that have really hurt people's hearts and broken their hearts in many places. And one of the things that I want to try and find an answer and a sort of discussion point today is we think sometimes when we're revolting, when we're speaking out against the affliction or the trauma that we've gone through, we don't actually recognize that actually that pendulum swing that we might be in actually isn't healing us. It's actually creating the same kind of dogma, but on a completely flipped side of the swing. And so, let me try and explain that a little bit more. So let's take my atheism, for example. I lost my father at the age of 23. I held on, I white-knuckled on with my faith for another 2 years. I didn't want to be that cliche person that would lose their faith straight after a traumatic event or a divorce or whatever those things are that can make people really question their faith. I didn't want to be that person, but I was also refusing to look at some of the pain and some of the trauma that I was going through. I was refusing to look at the shock of it all. I talked about it all, but I didn't really own the hurt or the pain. I was so bent on the victim mentality of the affliction of death that I didn't actually own the fact that this was my trauma and how do I respond to it? How do I act with it? How do I cultivate healing and growth? So I found myself in this space where I basically had another 4 deaths after the loss of my father. You know some of this, some of you know the story already. And now by this point, I was up to the neck in death and trauma and tragedy. And I think at that time, no one had talked to me about owning my own pain because this had been done to me. This wasn't something that I asked for. This wasn't something that I signed some random cursed contract. Like this was just what was happening. And I thought that God was supposed to protect me from these things. I thought that he was supposed to give us a prosperous way. Well, it felt like I was in nothing but a sort of journey of death and destruction. So, like a classic 25-year-old, I revolted and became a very, very angry atheist. And I really mean very bitter, very vitriolic towards the church, towards God himself. Sometimes it's hard to talk about because I obviously know so much more 15, 17 years later from that time. But I really relate to a lot of people at the moment who are deconstructing, who are going through these questions of the goodness of God. My fear is that sometimes we're not looking at ourselves and we're not looking at actually how we can navigate some of these difficult times of persecution and affliction. Sometimes we're looking for the outside world to help and heal us. Sometimes we're looking for the right therapist. Sometimes we're looking for just perhaps a pat on the back or a community of people that believe in the same things that we do. You know when you're not doing well when you're cutting off other people that have a different opinion to you. You're not doing well when you're not allowing people to feed into you. You're not doing well when you're not actually apologizing for some of what your hurts are doing to other people. And so in my atheism, in my revolt against everything that I dedicated myself to, sacrificed myself to, being obedient to the Lord onto for so long, I absolutely pendulum swinged to complete rebellion. And rebellion is an interesting word to use in this one, because again, you know, that's how those in the religious world would see it. And also, those that are uncomfortable with other people's message would call it rebellion. I would call it a lot of pain. And so I went on this journey of trying to fix my emotional needs with relationships and different things, different entities, different journeys. I even tried to use my experiences and my own learnings, my curiosity of what atheism was, new atheism. I'm very glad that I wasn't actually vlogging or filming all of this stuff at the time, not because it wasn't valuable, but because I was still in the process and I still didn't really know what bitterness could look like from the outside of somebody else. Now, I can spot it very quickly in people's content. I can spot it very quickly when they are bracketing and labeling other people, when they are, when there is an injustice that has been done to them, they wish to drag the other side down by character defamation, by removing themselves from them in a relationship, by canceling them out. This is where cancel culture has come from. It's because we can't see the very thing that is triggering us. And so we want to slam it out. We want to punish it, whether it's disconnection or silence. We haven't got the maturity or the character to be able to sit in rooms with people that disagree with us. We haven't got the character or the maturity to be able to face the adversity of difficult conversations. And those difficult conversations actually can be a great growing lesson for us. They can actually nurture us. They can keep us from being narrow-minded. And what I'm noticing an awful lot of at this moment is content that is being created to damn the other side. I'm watching an awful lot of divisive conversations. I'm trying to pick up the phone to some of these people and they're refusing to pick up the phone to me. These are people that I love. These are people that I would do anything for and fought for often in their journey. But when it comes to me honoring something that triggers them, they want to disconnect. When it comes to me just wanting to love everyone, there's this gang warfare that happens. If you're not on our side, you don't love me. I don't want to get into gang warfare. I actually want to find places of unity. I want to find places that we can actually have these conversations of, hey, this doesn't feel right. This doesn't feel just. And I feel like we need to find ways to be able to overcome and progress in a way that is good and healthy for everyone. I don't think it helps to see the demise of a family, for example, because their ancestors represented something that none of us would find acceptable today. I don't think that helps to wish to see the demise of them. I think it helps to stay in the room and have conversations to try and find progression within that same family, to try and not hold against the ancestors, the things that their great-great-great-great-grandfather had done to some of our ancestors. We actually have to find ways to have difficult conversations in the room with people. Otherwise, we get no further forward. And in my atheism, I would argue Christians under the table. I felt like almost like this little puffed up chest, because I could argue them against their own gospel. I could also argue them under the table for hours about their beliefs and what they thought and how dogmatic they were and how they were bigots. I used to use that an awful lot and it didn't do anything. All it did was make me look very bitter. It made me look very angry and it left those people feeling pretty deflated and pretty unloved. I don't think it's right to be calling anyone any kind of labels or names. I don't think we should be calling ourselves them. Whether that's a marital status or sexuality, whether we've gone through divorces, whether we don't have children or do have children, there are lots of things we can campaign for. There are lots of things we can find justice for. But we've really got to start asking, what are our methods to getting there? What are our methods to actually be able to find this beautiful fruit that we're looking for all the time from good things, from good actions, They don't occur when you're arguing with people under the table. They don't occur when you're slaying one person with your opinion against their opinion. I know they can be entertaining to watch sometimes. It can be really enjoyable to watch some really interesting debates that can be had. But when we start to create identity from trauma, that's when we start to create opinions into weapons. And I don't want us to do that anymore. I want us to try and find a way that we can all stay in the same room. And of course, I really care about authenticity. I don't really like it when people have agendas or are flattering you when they've actually been pretty awful behind your back. I think it's really important to have authentic, honest conversations. And I think it's also only doable when people have got some humility. When there's a refusal to actually talk about something or a refusal to give a different opinion, there's ego involved. And we're not going to get much further forward if we have a lot of pride in our own journey. If we've taken pride in our afflictions, if we've taken pride in overcoming our trauma, before you know it, you're actually going to limit yourself in all the other endless possibilities that are available to you. I think what I'm trying to say, it's important to acknowledge trauma. It's important to actually go through the process and not shoving under the carpet. It's important to process pain. But I also don't want us to hold and bracket and label ourselves as people that have become reformed from this movement or this experience to this. It's part of the journey for sure. But I think when we get so attached to that trauma or get so attached to the familiarity of that trauma, we can't really move further forward. And in my atheism, for as much as I hated the judgments, the incredibly vitriolic legalism that I would often find myself being on the other side of religion, I was no different myself being an atheist. I thought I was doing good by finding freedom and progressing forward and going against religion and institutions. I'd done that for years now. I was going against it and I felt proud of myself for going against these organized religion, all these different things that I built a lot of my identity from. I was oppressed, so now I'm free. I was all of these different labels that I was putting on myself as a way of me thinking that I was growing, that I was healing, that I was in momentum. However, the number one thing that shows that we are healing, that we are growing, is that we're loving people and that we're serving other people. That we're actually thinking of others beyond our own identity and beyond ourselves. There are times, very rarely, I have to say, but there have been times where I get messages on Instagram by people that don't know me, and they are putting me in a bracket, making a decision about something that I feel or something that I think because I've honored someone in a space. Well, I think honor is due everywhere. I think it's actually due to the most heinous criminal in prison. My honor doesn't dictate whether I condone what their actions were. My honor is available and creates repentance a lot of the time. But there are times where we have to place up boundaries to people that are not owning their own trauma. We have to put up places where people are continuously blaming the ex. They're blaming the father or the mother. They're blaming experiences that they've been through, that it's so much easier for people in privileged positions than it is without. It would be a little bit like me, who isn't having children, looking at someone as a mother, holding a child and calling her privileged to have children. Well, that's true, but that doesn't help us get any closer to each other. That doesn't, my own hurts of not being able to have children, for example, doesn't mean that that's then the person who is able to have children, their problem, their issue. And it actually makes them feel more uncomfortable because this is what they were given. This was the journey of their life. These were the cards that were dealt with. I remember being brought up at school and I was working class, and everyone else at my school, the majority of people at my school weren't working class. They were middle to upper class. They were in a private school and I was there with a scholarship. I was very lucky to be able to just work really hard and try and get a scholarship into the school. Well, I could have spent all of those 8 years between the ages of sort of 10 to 18 thinking that everyone around me was more privileged because they have horses and stables and ponies and money. Actually, that never came into my head. There were times where I didn't want my friends to come to my house because I was embarrassed about how my house looked, or that it was a small three-bed, two-bed, two-bath semi-detached house, and it wasn't this mansion like I would find in birthday parties where I got completely lost down the back stairs of their home. You know, I didn't hold it against them because I was afflicted with being working class. I was inspired by them. I was inspired by how a different world lives. And they were also really good friends to me. And I didn't put anything where I felt insecure or I felt hard done by against them. It was really important for me to not do that. And because I felt very secure in my working class background and loved being working class, I didn't hold it against anyone that was different. I think that's the beauty of when we do come from a secure space. I was actually given beautiful amounts of kind of nurturing and education to recognize that these things that might define us, they are actually not part of my identity, whether I was working class or upper class or middle class. We had such a classist society in England and still do on some elements. But I think we're getting better in the sense of like, we're not holding that against each classes. We're actually just going to do what we can with our lives and take opportunities where we can. Bartimaeus gained an income from being blind. To be able to see again, he would lose income. So I think we got to be careful not to start getting comfortable by using these afflictions or using these experiences of, well, I'm single because there aren't any good guys out there. I'm single because of da 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 da. Whatever the reasons are that we're giving for being in the affliction that we're in, it's actually holding us back. Well, I'm wearing this beggar's coat because I'm blind, could have been Bartimaeus's response. Instead, who's passing by? Jesus is passing by. I've heard he's the one that does miracles. And I don't want this. Ask and you shall receive. Hey, Jesus. Hey, he can come to me if he wants. He takes off his garment. He takes it off. He takes off his identity of being a blind man and walks to Jesus and is instantly healed. There's something about removing your cloak from whenever you identified your afflictions to be. I'm not suggesting it's easy. That was a really courageous act of Bartimaeus. But it was his decision to remove the cloak before the opportunity to get healed came. And I really want us to try and do the same. I want us to try and find ways that we don't afflict ourselves with all these things that other people have done. It's always nice in the process of healing from trauma to gain a sorry. It's always nice for people to apologize when they have hurt us, when they have done things. That helps us be able to build bonds and safety with them again. But if we don't have someone apologizing, which often can be the case, then it's actually my choice to remove the cloak anyway. I'm not going to have this affliction or the hard done be moments to be part of my identity. Just because a group of people couldn't say sorry doesn't mean that my healing is now robbed. I can't wait for the apology to come. It's actually my job to take off the cloak of whatever I identified myself to be. Because from there's always a great opportunity. If something could pass you by if you're not careful, and you'll miss the opportunity of the miracle because you got so focused on wearing the garment, on wearing the beggar's coat, that you miss the opportunity of completely overcoming not just that, but all the other things that you are. You are so much bigger than the abuse that you faced. You are so much more victorious than the things you overcame. You are way beyond a deconstruction label or any kind of label that you want to put on yourself in order to identify yourself as the victor. I don't want us to be in a victor age. I want us to start looking at ways that we can actually start helping and serving other people. I'm seeing so many people create content and argue on opinions all the time. I've done this myself, so I'm not trying to come from a soapbox here. I'm doing this from like, oh, I think I labeled myself here and I put myself in a bracket of my own. I think I labeled myself here in a space of what it should look like and how it should be. And I won't be able to remove myself from these afflictions until I get apologies from the other side. How did I come back from being an atheist to this? Well, I actually was so moved by kindness. It didn't help that I was arguing people under the table all the time. I might have been puffed in my chest for a moment. My puffed up ego got a little bit of a moment and I slayed someone with some random witty quip. I'd also seen a lot of people try and do this to me also. What I think helps is I got fed up of feeling fed up. I recognized that I wasn't actually growing. I still had this element of vitriolic and bitterness that was cutting me off from really beautiful relationships. I was actually unable to find ways of moving forward. And I was wanting the world to look like something in order for me to be healed. What I recognized is, as I get fed up of feeling fed up of my own opinions, and you will get like that, you will get fed up of hearing your own opinions, and you will get fed up of having these conversations all the time because you're trying to process and verbally process all the ways we can find the solutions. Well, actually, often there is an ownership that has to take place in order for us to start really healing. As I get fed up of feeling fed up, I also become really fascinated with kindness. And it was in this obsession of kindness and looking at who were the kindest people on the planet, including one of them being Jesus, that I realized I'm far removed from kindness, especially when I'm putting brackets and labels on people, especially when I'm arguing people under the table or defaming them in any kind of social media message whatsoever. The passive aggressiveness that happens in this kind of content doesn't really help. We've all done it. We've all done it. But we're not healing and we're not growing from it. So what does it look like to actually be enamored with kindness for a moment? And all of a sudden, I start to look at the historical accounts of Jesus outside of the Bible, the historical accounts where people were actually writing about this phenomenal guy that was doing phenomenal things at this particular time and era of life. And all of it was bucking every bracket and every label that everyone was trying to put him into. In one moment, he was this religious stream of thought. In another moment, he was the opposing religious stream of thought. He was incredibly confusing and very unifying, oddly, to brackets and segregated communities that were all taking place because of our opinions. We really haven't progressed that much for 2,000 years. We still have that innate desire to be right over the other person. We still have that dogmatic approach that wants to label and push down the other side of the story so that we can feel better. That doesn't work. It doesn't work. It doesn't ever show any kind of results or any kind of fruit. It only brings us to the end of ourselves. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's a good thing because then we start to own the story. Then we start to own our process and our trauma. And even when I've been fostering children, there have been times where some of the children are very, very trapped in their trauma and very, very trapped in PTSD and all of the things that they're navigating. And then there are other ones that are using this stuff to manipulate their reasons to not heal and to not grow. And it's somebody else's space. We become entitled to other people's behaviors being a particular way. I'm preaching to myself as much as I'm preaching to anyone else out there. I really am. I wanted to remove some of these brackets that I was putting on myself, whether it was a single foster mum or the single lady. I wanted to remove myself from these brackets that I've been putting on myself because I was proud of what I'd overcome and the victorious moments of what I've been able to achieve and fought through and persevered. I'm still focusing now on me and my story. I'm not looking at helping other people. And so, How do we sort of remove ourselves from this space? How do we know we've healed from trauma? How do we know that we've actually removed our garment and actually crossed over the street to receive the miracle? How do we know that within ourselves when we've spent so long just arguing and giving our opinions? Well, I wrote a list actually, and I'm going to share it with you just to kind of show some of the areas that I felt were indicative of people that I pastor and people that I go on this journey on with my clients, people that I coach, as well as people that have been in my life just as inspired friends. I've been so enamored by how they navigate forgiveness and how they move forward and the favor on their lives as they leave this stuff behind. Well, the first sign you can tell when you're healing, when you've taken off your coat and you're starting to open yourself up to the miracle is when you're not wishing to destroy others, to see them punished, to condescend them, or even berate what these people represent, because the hurt and pain caused doesn't have as much power as it used to over you. You've got you back, and you've found a vision to move forward beyond the things that you've overcome. You're beyond that, yet that lovely thing of like, you're not your history, you're not your past. That's true. But we can ensure that even more so if we're defining ourselves by something other than what we overcame. You're not, you're serving others. You are serving others, and you're finding solutions that are far more practical than ever before. So instead of arguing the opinion all the time, you're actually going, well, what's the solution? It's not going to help if I just have a massive argument with someone on social media. It helps if there's a solution. Hey, this, you have an opposing thought to me. I've been really afflicted by this trauma. What you're representing is everything I detest and loathe. But I wonder if there's a solution that as someone that's been afflicted and someone that's in it, and whatever you've caused me or whatever you're praising, well, I struggle with this, but instead of patronizing you and condescending you in many different ways or attacking you on social media, here are some of the solutions. Here are some of the things that we can collaborate together with and actually find a way to have these conversations. Bitterness and vitriolic opinions, I've said, don't work on you anymore. And you've noticed the polarized audience that you've actually created isn't bringing any fruit to the problem of the issue. People are more divided, more ferocious, and there is zero peace. A lot of times people are posting up attacks or insults of what other people have done towards them. It's still feeding on a victim mentality, an afflicted space. Now, hear me out. There are times where we actually do need to raise the alarm because of sexual abuse, because of outrageous injustices. But it's how we discuss these things. It's how we work to find solutions and to find actual redemption and restoration from these stories. And pulling them down and humiliating them and publicly shaming them isn't often a way. It actually requires difficult conversations with the very people that you're avoiding having conversations with. It's actually requiring direct approaches rather than passive aggressive ones that happen on social media. You'll find that you are serving others, that you are finding solutions to help serve others, and you'll actually be more intrigued in the life stories that don't need to be content for social media. The ego isn't interested anymore in actually creating more content and creating more conversation. Oh my gosh, we need to make this more. I know that's all part of the sort of fun of communication and articulation, and never before has there been a more powerful communication tool. But I also want to make sure we're stewarding it and treasuring it well. You're able to receive challenge and feedback. You're actually able to have people speaking into your lives and not getting triggered when people suggest that there's a slight nudge or a slight challenge on something. You are more courageous. You're not hiding behind screens, platforms, or social media to validate your ego. You're actually living your life, one full of wonder, exploration, and courageous risk. You're not seeking the approval or the rejection of others and their opinions. Sometimes we're even looking for those that are rejecting us to confirm or deny something about ourselves. The real survivors pick up their pieces. For any sense of abuse, heartache, grief is temporary, and it molds and adapts over time to what you tell your mind to believe. The quicker and more courageous we're at facing those things without blaming others, even if there is someone to blame, the quicker we get to defining ourselves by something far more brilliant, far less reliant on the brokenness of humanity. But by figuring the very things that you were wired for, you are not your greatest ailment. You are not your greatest achievement. Your identity isn't based on your history, nor even whom your family were. You are not your resume, your poor choices, your great choices. You are not the boyfriends you dated, the spouses you loved and lost. You are not the children you had, nor the wedding you haven't yet experienced. You are not your singleness, your sexuality, your church hurts, your church victories, your best jokes, your darkest hours. You are so much more than that. And it forever evolves. It's forever changing. Your opinions will change. I hope, dear Lord, if my opinions didn't change or hadn't changed these last few decades, then I would still believe that Rainbow Bright should have led for president, and that George Michael was undoubtedly at any time now, at some point, he was going to fall in love with me. Those were the opinions I had 30 odd years ago. And I'm rather pleased that I evolved and changed my opinions and I didn't rely on those for my identity. Let life be a teacher. I'll say it again. Let life be a teacher. Find the passions you wish to embrace and the injustices you wish to change, but be careful to bracket yourself with holding on to your cloak. Because one day someone might just pass you by, holding a hope, a miracle, ready for you to take an opportunity of. They might literally open your eyes again to something far more beautiful. But in order to obtain it, you have to remove your cloak. And the only person who can take that off is you. It's you.